Earlier this week, the British Parliament released a report that, among other things, concluded that Rupert Murdoch was not a fit person to run News Corporation. It's just the latest chapter in the scandal that began with revelations of phone hacking that made international headlines last June. Sarah Ellison is a contributing editor for Vanity Fair. She's been writing about the scandal and its implications from the beginning, and I'm pleased to welcome her to today's second Backstory segment. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Do you think that the committee's conclusion that Rupert Murdoch is not, quote, not a fit person was influenced by the fact that during his first round of testimony last July, he said that he wasn't even in the loop on the whole matter of the phone hacking?
Well, I think that contributed to it. I think what they were actually mostly referring to is the fact that there was this sense that executives under Murdoch were really being untruthful, and he wasn't being forthcoming at all. So I think that that was the cumulative effect.
The Culture, Media, and Sports Select Committee issued the report and voted on each section, and that section passed with a vote of 6-4, which was along party lines.
That's right. The Tories objected to that particular line and felt that it was overreaching from what the remit that the committee had.
And they were careful not to use the word unfit.
Because that would have mimicked too closely the wording of the regulator in Britain, Ofcom, that has a fit and proper test for owners of broadcasters like BSkyB.
So that might have led to a lawsuit or some other problems, whereas this is just a slap on the wrist.
Well, this is slightly shielded, but not very carefully.
Was the committee commenting on the culture of the company?
I think that's exactly what they were commenting on. I mean, I think that it's not up to this select committee to determine who's a great capital allocator or who's a great CEO in terms of making good acquisitions. What they were commenting on was sort of the overall morality and ethical culture of this company.
Well, you've written about the culture. Can you describe it for us?
Well, I think there was a great sense of being part of this buccaneering, pirate-like culture.
Is that something Rupert Murdoch was encouraging?
Absolutely. I mean, it was sort of, it's a 50,000-person cult of personality. People really identify with Murdoch. I think the company doesn't really exist the way that it has existed without him. So he was, you know, he had this reputation as building the company from one newspaper in Australia and sort of breaking the rules along the way, but nothing too serious. Reveling in that. I think people liked the fact that parts of the company were really on the outside of things. Of course, now they're very much part of the establishment as a major multinational, but that was certainly part of their identity.
But he's an Australian, as you point out, and an American citizen, lives here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that sense of the cult of personality in this country, or is it just that I don't work for one of the Murdoch publications or movie companies or television stations or whatever else?
Well, I think that there's a sense certainly within the company. First of all, there's their entertainment holdings are sort of more eclectic than what the news division reflects. And I think that there is this sense, even in those divisions, although L.A. has always been a different animal, but there is a sense within the company that people are always wondering what Rupert thinks about a particular idea. And I think that's where that sort of cult of personality can come from.
But in the British case, of course, James Murdoch played a major role, and the report singled him out. He was the head of News International when the phone hacking occurred. They singled him out for not being alert to what was going on. Is the problem that he wasn't alert to it, or that he didn't try to put an end to it?
I think that it's twofold. One is the odd thing about this is that James really didn't like the newspaper business. And he didn't pay much attention to it. This was sort of his dad's domain, even though it officially reported to him.
Well, he was the heir apparent, at least.
Absolutely.
He would have to take over the newspapers.
Right. But to him, in his mind, the newspapers made up a minuscule portion of the company and were shrinking while while BSkyB and all these satellite businesses were growing. So I think he was sort of happy to ignore them. And now it turns out to his detriment.
Well, newspapers are losing money. Some of the newspapers, like the New York Post, are bleeding millions of dollars every year.
That's right.
So he just saw this in terms of business?
I think
BSkyB, for example, is
doing great.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that he was looking for ways that he could put his stamp. I mean, it's a problem being a Murdoch within News Corporation and not being Rupert Murdoch. So he was looking for a way to put his own stamp on the business and his own stamp on the company. He had a lot of experience working in the satellite businesses in India and in Asia, and certainly he was head of B-Sky B before he came over to News Corporation. So I think that that was the part of the business that he was really interested in.
The report also said that three former managers at News International, Colin Myler, Tom Crone, and Les Hinton, could be cited for contempt of Parliament.
Yes. I mean, those are serious charges, and it's an example, I think, of certainly those men in their testimony appeared not to be telling, to be less than forthcoming, and at worst lying before the committee. What this shows on a larger sense is the company's willingness to sacrifice lots and lots of people in order to save the larger corporation.
Well, isn't Colin Myler still the editor of the Daily News here in New York?
Well, he is editor of the Daily News here in New York, but that's Mort Zuckerman's newspaper, so he's left. He was the editor of News of the World.
They've raided each other any number of times.
This is a particularly interesting rivalry because Colin Myler used to be at the New York Post, then he went to the News of the World, and now he's back at the Daily News.
And Crone was the legal manager of News of the World. Hinton was James Murdoch's predecessor, chairman of News International, and he went on to the Wall Street Journal.
That's right.
And
he's left
the Journal?
He has left the Journal. He resigned during that that famous week of the Millie Dowler hacking revelations when so many people had to resign, and he was one of them. He did run this newspaper division for many years, and at the time when this alleged hacking took place. And so he's given testimony before the committee and has refuted their conclusions, but there are still very many questions about what his involvement really was.
My guest is Sarah Ellison, a contributing editor for Vanity Fair. We're talking about the problems for Rupert Murdoch's media empire. The committee's report alludes to documents that remain sealed. Is there a chance that we'll hear more about these documents as the Leveson inquiry into media ethics continues?
Well, I think that what everyone is dancing around in Britain is the fact that there are multiple ongoing criminal investigations. So there are lots of emails and lots of documentary evidence that we haven't seen yet, that we can't see until those criminal cases resolve. The Leveson inquiry is now turning to look at lots and lots of British politicians. And if what we've seen in the past is any indication, there could be some very interesting and potentially damning exchanges between News Corporation and News International executives and members of the British government.
Well, Rupert Murdoch was in court for the Leveson inquiry last week, and unlike his appearance before Parliament last July, he seemed to criticize or blame a lot of his former employees. Is this a change in tactic? Is he using the Rumsfeld defense that it was just a few bad apples?
Well, he's definitely using that defense. I mean, for a long time, News Corporation was talking about how there was one rogue reporter who was involved with hacking into people's voicemails, and it seems like what they've now determined is that there was one rogue newspaper, which was the News of the World. And so anyone who had any involvement with that newspaper is at fault.
Although the Sun, the best-selling daily newspaper in Britain,
was bribing
has also
people
been brought
potentially,
in.
Right, over.
And I guess the reason that he has been called not a fit person to run News International is that he's kind of denying that the buck stops here, even though he's the boss.
Well, CEOs have resigned for less than this. And I think that his decision to stay on is certainly, and he's taking a sort of fighting stance, even though there have been lots and lots of apologies. I think that it's a reflection that yes, you know, that he's not yet really taking responsibility for this.
Well, it's his baby. It's hard to resign under the circumstances. He created this monstrous media empire.
He created it, and he and his family control 40% of it.
He said that Tom Crone, the former legal manager at News of the World, had tried to prevent the paper's journalists from telling News International executives that allegations about phone hacking went beyond a single reporter, and that he and other executives were victim to a cover-up.
Right.
Does that add to Crone's troubles, given that the parliamentary report said that he might be cited for contempt?
Well, I think Crone has a lot of a lot to deal with. I think that he's somebody who is clearly in a lot of legal jeopardy. Being in contempt of Parliament is not something that anybody would really want. It's possible that he is going to be one of the major fall guys for this whole thing.
His testimony before Parliament contradicted James Murdoch's, didn't it?
That's right. That's right. As with Colin Myler did as well.
So that would suggest James Murdoch is also potentially in danger.
Yes, James is certainly. I mean, James has certainly suffered from this crisis. He's given up multiple roles at the company. He had to resign as chairman of BSkyB, which was one of the parts of the company that he absolutely loved. He was the heir apparent. He was going to be the next CEO, and now no one sees a path for something like that to happen. Whether he's going to be arrested or whether there's really a documentary trail to him, there is one, but whether or not he can deny portions of that, which he has done so far, he could end up skating by this without being in real legal trouble.
But he was the heir apparent because other members of the family who one would have assumed were ahead of him in the possibility of taking over displeased their father. So what happens now? Does Dad go back and start looking at his daughter and his older son?
Well, so, yeah, right. What you refer to is that Lachlan Murdoch, James's older brother, was initially the heir apparent, and then he was driven from the company, moved back to Australia. James was the next heir apparent. There's sort of a curse of being a Murdoch child. As soon as you get to be the heir apparent, something terrible happens to you.
But there's also a sister.
There's a sister, Liz Murdoch, mm-hmm. whose company was recently purchased by News Corporation, and she was going to join the board, and then she decided not to join the board in the midst of the hacking scandal. I think that what's happening now, though, is that the public shareholders' appetite for a Murdoch at the head of the company couldn't be lower. And the person that you see sort of rising within the company to have a lot of power is someone named Chase Carey, who few of us have really heard of, but he's a very good operator. He is the deputy to Rupert Murdoch. And I think that what you're witnessing is sort of a decline of the entire Murdoch family's power and influence within the company.
But can we assume that this new guy has clean hands? Because everybody seems to have been touched by this in one way or another.
They have. I mean, he couldn't be farther from the newspaper business, and it's who knows? I mean, the problem with the company now is that no one, everything that they do is looked on with skepticism, and there's not anyone who seems like they could be, beyond the pale. But if there is someone, it's probably Chase Carey.
Now, one of the things that I looked upon with skepticism was that at one point during his appearance, Murdoch said that he wished that he had closed News of the World years ago.
Right.
Now, News of the World was the best-selling newspaper in England at the time.
Right. I mean, I'm certain in retrospect he thinks, well, if I could have closed it before this had all blown up, then maybe that would be convenient. But there was actually one of the former journalists of the News of the World who came out very shortly after. He said that with an anecdote about how he had bounded into the newsroom proclaiming such pride in all of the work that they were doing there. I mean, I think that that's one of those statements where it suited him at the time to say that, but people found it hard to believe.
Isn't a major part of the scandal the fact that many of these things happened years ago, continue to happen, and yet the cover-up was so successful? In fact, until The Guardian and then The New York Times got into the act, it looked like it probably would succeed.
Well, there's no question that without The Guardian reporting, we would know very little we would know none of what has happened here. What makes News Corp's assurances that everything is clean now seem so difficult to believe is that they in fact, right after the first cases of hacking were uncovered, they said, well, we've done a rigorous internal investigation and everything is clean. And then they say it again, we've done this, everything is clean. And so at every stage, they take sort of two steps back and draw a new line. And what people keep pushing for is either an admission of real responsibility from Rupert Murdoch or something of the like.
Well, now it seems like they're willing to throw everybody under the bus other than members of the Murdoch family.
Yes, it does appear that way.
Does News International admit paying off phone hacking victims because it was bidding for the rest of the British Sky broadcasting network that it didn't already own?
I don't think that they say that that's why they were doing it. But certainly there is a... I've talked to multiple executives within the company about why the bad news wasn't delivered higher up the scale. Why would these middle managers take it upon themselves to cover something up when they didn't really have a dog in the fight? Why did they do that? And the idea was that who would want to take this bad news to the boss, which is how they referred to Rupert. And so I think that there was this, meanwhile, of personal interest to me as a former Wall Street Journal reporter, in 2007 when they were starting this sort of initial parts of the cover-up, Rupert was bidding on Dow Jones. And the idea that if a scandal like this had blown up while he was trying to do that, for that deal to have gone through in those circumstances would have been very, very difficult.
In fact, he accused the New York Times of doing that, an extensive report on it, simply because they were being competitive.
Right.
He was being more successful with the Wall Street Journal.
Right. I mean, I think that it's common for him to claim that if anyone brings up anything negative about the company, they're motivated by their business interests.
Well, as we see with Colin Mylar, people go to work for the competition.
Right.
And I assume that people who worked for the Murdoch newspapers then went to work for other publications. Do we have a sense that the phone hacking went beyond the Murdoch publications?
Absolutely. I think that there's a strong, strong suspicion in Britain in particular that this was something that happened at just about every paper in the tabloid sphere over there.
Weren't reporters and private investigators hacking the phones of pretty much anybody who they found interesting? Politicians, celebrities, members of the royal family. 5,000 people, it's estimated, were hacked. What were they doing? Was it just simply to get newspaper stories, or were they using the information for other means?
Well, I think that there's a sense that it was initially to get a story, and then what you could do is use that story to bargain for another story. So you could go to the subject who had been hacked and say, listen, we know this about you, and we're going to have to run with this. And then that person would have the option of saying, well, listen, don't write that. I've got something much better for you. And so they could either choose to sell out another colleague or a family member. It just created, I mean, it was sort of, somebody described it to me once as sort of a constant blackmail.
But then some people must have noticed that things that nobody could have known other than by reading their email were being made public. Were they complaining in public?
Well, the reason that this came to light is that Prince William hurt his knee and left a message on his brother's phone to say, I think I crocked my knee, and then the knee got better and nobody did anything about it, and the News of the World had a story about it. And members of the royal family said there's no way that that could have come out any other way.
But it's not just a phone hacking scandal now. It is now a scandal that involves Scotland Yard and other police institutions, and implicating the Prime Minister and members of his cabinet.
It's now a story. Not only has it gone beyond phone hacking and bribery, which is another one of the specific claims, but it's really a story about elites and how the elites interacted with one another, and how that everyone really did seem that they were somehow protecting one another, whether it was the police, politicians, the press. Everybody had a little bit of dirt on everybody else.
And now the Prime Minister, David Cameron, had to go before Parliament and say there was no quid pro quo. He wasn't being helpful to Murdoch with
right.
the B Sky B offer and some other things, simply because Murdoch had thrown all of his support behind Cameron's campaign.
Well, I think that now, with the Leveson inquiry that you referred to earlier, what we're going to see next, in terms of that investigation, is a real, real spotlight on the British government and on Cameron himself, who had a ton of involvement with News International.
What about the Metropolitan Police, Scotland Yard? Have they been? I mean, they always were presented, at least in the movies, as the most spotless organization in the world.
Well, if anyone's reputation has been damaged as much, if not more, than Rupert Murdoch's and News Corporation's, it's Scotland Yard's, because they have been, not only have there been members of their force that have been paid off, but there are other members who were briefing journalists about matters that they had no business briefing them on. And so I think that multiple people have already resigned at Scotland Yard. You have now one woman, Sue Akers, who's running these investigations, who's sort of trying to set things right. But there's no question that before this is over, you're going to see many more heads that will roll.
Well, people have resigned, lost their jobs. Some biggies, like Rebecca Brooks, have been arrested a couple of times and questioned by police. But we haven't seen any cases. Do you think that cases are being developed?
Yes. No. There's no question that this is we're going to see people. It sort of has a long way to run. So people are developing the cases. What I understand is that people will be charged with various things over the summer, and then they get a long time to prepare their defense. And so this will be something that goes on and on and on, and on for months and months.
Well, it was announced earlier today that Rebecca Brooks and Andy Coulson, who worked for the Prime Minister for a while, to great embarrassment, will be appearing before the Leveson inquiry next week. Mm-hmm. How wide is the scope of the inquiry?
Well, the inquiry is sort of a broad inquiry that looks at the relationship between the press and politicians, the press and police, and then overall press ethics. They're trying to sort of limit it, but it is one of these investigations that you can see going and having tentacles everywhere.
Now, we have just moments left, but many Americans are wondering whether similar things were done in this country by Murdoch Publications. Senator John Rockefeller wrote a letter to Lord Justice Leveson to see if they'd uncovered any evidence that American laws had been broken, and Senator Frank Lautenberg has called for an investigation into the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, mm-hmm. whether that was violated. Any sense that the Post or some other publications might have been hacking?
Well, what you have now is there are a few civil lawsuits that are about to be brought in the United States. If you get people with subpoena power really looking at practices here in the United States, I think we could find examples of that. So far, nothing specific has come out, but the wheels that turn this are beginning to turn here.
And it's also illegal to bribe somebody for an American corporation to bribe somebody in a foreign country.
Exactly.
And there's definitely been bribery here.
Well, that you're referring to the Justice Department and the FBI's investigation into whether News Corp violated the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, there's an ongoing investigation there.
Sarah Ellison is a contributing editor for Vanity Fair. I want to thank you so much for coming by to talk about what's happening with the Rupert Murdoch media empire in our second backstory segment today.
Thank you.